Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are settling in for a serious debrief today. Just got out of session two of the Everyday Peacemakers workshop.
Yeah, the one David Young is facilitating, and it's really building.
It is. So for anyone just joining us, session one was really the foundation. It was all about character and identity.
Mm-hmm. The who of the peacemaker. He really grounded us in Matthew 5:9, blessed are the peacemakers.
But the big takeaway for me was that having a good heart isn't enough. You need what he calls skillful hands.
Right, from Psalm 78:72, integrity of heart and skillful hands.
Exactly. So if session one was the why we have to engage conflict, well, session two was finally the how. We got the beginning of that roadmap, the go conversation.
And it all hinged on Matthew 18:15. If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault. And David's whole point was that we get hung up on that one little word, go.
How do you actually do that? How do you go?
Yeah, without a strategy, you just end up making things worse.
Which is why he started with that exercise, the peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Oh, that was so good. Just trying to explain how to make one to someone who knows absolutely nothing.
We all stumbled over it. You just assume so much.
Yeah.
You know, get the bread. What's bread? Where is it?
It was the perfect analogy for conflict. We assume the other person sees the world exactly like we do, and when they don't follow our unspoken rules, we don't think, I explained that poorly.
No, you think you failed or you're not listening.
Exactly. And that's the heart of the problem.
He then put that right up against our models for discipleship. You know, from Matthew 28:19a, go and make disciples.
Right. For that, we have systems. We have books, studies, conferences, just step-by-step-by-step processes.
But for conflict inside the church with each other, he basically said, we have a vacuum. There's no universal coachable system.
Which is wild when you think about it. So he gave us the three criteria for any good strategy. It has to be explainable.
Right. So a normal person can get it.
Transferable. So you can coach someone else in it.
And sustainable. I like that one. The wisdom can't leave when the teacher leaves.
And none of that works if your language is fuzzy. The example of the chicken is ready to eat.
Is the chicken ready to be fed? Did the chicken finish its meal? Or is it ready for us to eat it?
Right. And we talk like that all the time in conflict. We say a conversation was great or someone is a jerk. It's totally useless for actually solving anything.
Ambiguity is the enemy, which I think leads us right into the four-step process he laid out.
Yep, the go process. Step one is plan and name the issue.
Step two, be curious and listen.
Three is share your opinion. And he said you might have to repeat 1 through 3.
And then step four is resolve the issue. With that little escape hatch at the end, go get help if it's not working.
Okay, so let's dig into step one. Plan and name the issue. This is the big one.
It's the don't shoot first and interview after step. He used Proverbs 21:5. The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty.
Diligence. I mean, actually planning the logistics. Who, what, when, where, how, why.
That really hit me. The idea of trying to have a serious talk with your spouse at 11:45 p.m. when you're both exhausted.
Yeah, that's not planning for success. That's planning for a bigger fight. We pick what's convenient, not what's effective.
And then the second part of step one, naming the issue. This is where it gets tough.
It has to be specific. He said you can't repent of being a jerk. It's just a label. It's not an action.
You have to name the actual sin, the actual behavior, what specifically happened.
And if you can't, you probably shouldn't be having the conversation. He brought up that riot in Acts 19.
Oh, yeah, where the crowd was just shouting and what was it? Most of them didn't even know why they were there.
They were just animated and confused. That's us in conflict a lot of the time. We're just animated about a vague feeling.
So you have to be able to define the problem. Which means you had to diagnose the context first.
Right. The spheres of conflict model. This was so helpful.
So conflict can come from the interpersonal.
Your own internal stuff, your baggage, your anger, your fatigue.
The interpersonal, which is you and me.
The groups, like political divides, social stuff.
Or systemic, you know, economics, government policies, things way bigger than us.
And the key insight there is that our biggest leverage is in the intrapersonal. How I choose to respond.
But we usually misdiagnose it. Like his example of yelling at the grocery store clerk because your coffee is expensive.
Yes. The problem is systemic global supply and demand, but you're making it an interpersonal attack on the clerk. It's totally misplaced.
And all that does is guarantee escalation. Which brings us to the spread of conflict scale.
The escalation scale, yeah. How a conflict moves from stage one, which is just resolving the issue.
All the way down to stage five, being hostile, and stage six, changing the relationship.
And those later stages are dangerous territory. Stage five, hostile, means they're ready to fight, and the relationship is now secondary.
And you gave that really strong warning about trying to intervene then. If you put two people in a room when they're at stage five,
you're just going to become the new target. Yeah. The well-meaning mediator gets pulled right into the conflict.
That real-life story about the chicken was just a perfect storm of escalation.
It was almost funny if it wasn't so painful. It starts with a missed text about buying a chicken for dinner.
A tiny little thing.
And it spirals. First, it's about the broken phone. Then it's about budgeting. Then it's about her spending habits. Then the appearance of the house.
And then the nuclear option, calling the mother-in-law.
Right. It was never about the chicken. It was about stress and respect and a total breakdown in communication. They were arguing over the story of the chicken.
And the craziest part was that they had people over for a Bible study, like, an hour later.
Total compartmentalization, just pretending everything was fine. They knew the right answers, but they didn't have the skillful hands to live them out.
So with all that, it raises a question. Do we have to address everything?
No. And that's the balance. He brought up Proverbs 19:11. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense.
There's wisdom in letting things go, but which things?
That's where the impact versus frequency chart came in. This was a really practical grid for making that decision.
So let's break it down. You have two axes. Is the issue substantive or shallow?
Substantive meaning it actually harms their relationship with God or others or themselves. Shallow is more like an annoyance.
And the other axis is frequent or rare.
Exactly. So if something is frequent and substantive, that's the red quadrant. You have to address it. It's causing real damage.
But if it's rare and shallow, that's the green quadrant.
That's the stuff you overlook. And his point was that we often get obsessed with the green stuff. We pick at the minor annoyances because we're scared to deal with the big red issues.
That's convicting. It really is. It makes you check your own motives.
So when you do decide to engage, he gave us those three ways to respond. You can join them.
So get into the mud with them. Adopt their bad attitude.
You can judge them, which is standing off to the side, self-righteously.
Or you can journey with them.
Which is the goal, giving them grace and space for God to work. And that requires choosing curiosity over reaction.
That's where he brought in that quote from Majid Nawaz. I wasn't expecting that.
Me neither. But it was so powerful. This idea of moral martial arts. Stand your ground, but seek common ground. And her idea of teaching how not to be offended.
I mean, considering what she deals with online, for her to choose curiosity over just lashing back, that's a real-world example of what he's talking about.
And that idea of curiosity is the perfect bridge to step two of the process.
Right. Step two, be curious and listen to them.
This is the part where we stop assuming we know everything.
And he said that God himself models this. In the garden, after the fall, he asks Adam and Eve, where are you?
It's not because God didn't know. He was asking for their benefit to get them to think. Curiosity is an act of love.
And we have to listen on a much deeper level than we're used to. He showed us that Venn diagram.
Yeah. We're trained to listen for facts and feelings, but that's just the surface.
The real work is listening for what's underneath. Identity, values, beliefs, and interests.
That example was so clear. The longtime volunteer who says, I've been here 30 years and I wasn't consulted.
If you just respond to the fact, well, you've actually been here 28 years, you've missed everything.
Or if you just say, I can see you feel hurt, that's better, but still not it. He's not talking about facts or feelings. He's talking about his values. He values loyalty. He's expressing an interest, which is the desire for appreciation.
You only get to that by being truly curious.
Which is what the snake story role play was all about. It's about competing stories.
We see ourselves as the victim, right? I'm the hiker who just got bit by a snake. I'm innocent.
But if you stop and are curious enough to interview the snake has a completely different story.
You stepped in my home. You crushed my children. I was defending my family.
Understanding the snake's story doesn't mean you agree that biting was the right response, but it helps you understand why they believed it was.
It just changes the whole dynamic of the conversation.
It does. Yeah. And he closed that section with the awareness test. The invisible gorilla video.
I've seen that before, but it gets me every time. You're so focused on counting the basketball passes.
That you completely miss the person in a gorilla suit who walks right through the middle of the players, beats their chest, and walks off.
Then the curtain in the background changes color, and a player leaves. You miss it all.
It's just a profound lesson in humility. In conflict, we think we see everything so clearly. We've counted all the passes, but we're so focused on the offense that we completely miss the gorilla in the room.
We miss the context. We miss the story. We miss the why behind the what.
Unless we choose to be curious, unless we ask.
So this deep dive on session two has really given us the first part of the toolkit. It's the preparation, step one, the plan, and step two, the curiosity.
It's all about diligence and humility, recognizing you don't have the whole story.
Right. We've got the framework now for how to prepare and how to listen. So session three will get into the active part.
Step three, sharing your own opinion. And then step four, actually moving toward a resolution. I'm interested to see how he builds on this.
Me too. So before we wrap, here's a final thought to mull over, something to take from what we heard today. David made the point that often the real issue isn't the sin itself, but the person's story about the sin. So ask yourself this week, when you're in a conflict, are you just trying to refute their facts, what they did wrong, or are you actually trying to understand their story, why they felt justified in doing it?